From the Carter Subaru Studios, this is the Jack and Spike Show.
Welcome back to the Jack and Spike Show. Jason Rance has got a story about the Seattle Police Department and how many officers they actually have. An SPD detective is under investigation for yelling at a bus driver, and it didn't go the way that you think that it did. There's an immigrant who died in ICE custody, was in solitary confinement for an unusually long period of time. But before we get to all that, Mr. Jason Rance is actually in the studio, our very own little jitterbug. Isn't that right, Rance? Look at how cute you are.
So tiny. Aw, thank you so much.
The tiny little,
you flatter.
Only 3 feet tall little jitterbug
over
there.
Very tiny.
Very small human being. So, Rance, I talked to you on Wednesday, I think, and you were giddy. You were giddy. You said, I got the real numbers on SPD and how bad it is. And I thought, well, last numbers I checked, it was like 682, 680, something like that. And you said, it's much worse. And then you walked right into your studio and I went, well, that's a nice way to end a conversation.
I'm such a tease.
So how many do they actually have and how many are actually eligible for retirement and when should I move out of Seattle?
So there are two different sets of numbers that actually matter. The first one is patrol officers. How many officers are actually patrolling the streets of Seattle? And it's only 424. And that's all inclusive. That's not 424 at any given moment. That's 424 total patrol police officers. I'm not counting, you know, captains that are assigned who don't actually go out.
Right. But these are the guys that roam our neighborhoods. That
you call 911?
Yeah, they respond to calls.
You want them over, you only have 424. And just to put that into some perspective, we obviously have different precincts around the city. Going into the North Precinct, for example, if you're just looking at the third watch, that's the overnight, and there's a lot of calls on the overnight. You only have 34 total working within third watch in that precinct, and that means regularly they only have about 13 cops who are responding to 911 calls. You go from precinct to precinct to precinct, you will see maybe not the majority of the time in every single precinct, but the majority of the time across the board working at or below staffing minimums, meaning this is the minimum number we need to be safe and to really have control of this community.
Right.
And they're usually at right the low end or below.
So when I look at, this is a weird thing, Jason, because you know I live in Eastlake in my very expensive apartment. When I look out, all I see is the security guards that drive around Fred Hutch. And then I see I just see SPD. I see about every 15 minutes driving by. Now, I live in a very nice neighborhood with basically no crime. You would imagine, wouldn't they want to be, I don't know, somewhere else, right? Well, I've got the security.
Why are they at Jack's house?
Well, that's what I'm saying is that I live in a very nice neighborhood that is very expensive and there is no crime whatsoever. And then if you walk, 15 minutes down the way, you're in not a nice neighborhood where there's a lot of crime.
Pop up to 105th and Aurora where the shootings happen on a far too regular basis.
That's what I'm saying.
Right?
You see,
keep in mind,
no cops.
Yeah,
right?
But keep in mind for you, they might be driving past you on the way to that very area, right?
Yes.
So, I mean, we're talking about they're probably doing emphasis patrols. The thing is, here, there actually have been quite a number of crimes, not violent crimes. We're seeing a lot of break-ins. There is a real estate company that manages or owns the buildings around this neighborhood with different scientific labs and whatnot. They've hired private security to do the patrols just to drive around the area to see whether or not someone is having a car broken into or a business getting hit. So they are actually spending their own money privately, because we just don't have enough police officers.
Yeah, I see them all the time. They make me feel super safe.
Yeah, but I kind of feel like that's a cost of doing business. I mean, wait.
Is this a bad take?
Laura,
is this a bad take?
I bet it is.
Because I think this might be a bad take.
And I'll tell you why.
Here comes Spike with a bad take. Spike's going to have a bad take. Everybody loves a bad take.
And here comes Spike.
So, Spike.
So, if a company comes into your neighborhood and puts in 400 offices and brings in another 600 employees or whatever, and all those cars come and park, isn't it on that business to them provide additional security, not the regular cops in your neighborhood? If I open a fireworks and Tinder stand, okay, isn't it on me then to put in like fire protection equipment and not count on calling the city every time my business goes up in flames?
Yeah, but your argument would make sense if.
Thank you. You said enough.
Let me sing it. If the people who they were bringing into the community were the ones breaking the law,
No.
I mean, you're paying taxes for the funding of police departments and for protection. That's what they're there
for.
If you bring in 500 extra cars, it's an extra target-rich environment. Is it on the company to then protect those 500 cars?
As someone who lives in that neighborhood, okay, and who's someone who sees those security guards on a regular basis.
And you think they're going to help, really?
They do, actually. And that's the point that I'm making, is that it's unfortunate that they have to do that. But all the people who work in that area, they have sealed parking. They have underground parking that they drive into. They have put in as many security apparatuses as they can. The problem is that in those buildings, you have private medical records, you have very expensive equipment, you have construction that's going on in some of those buildings. And on top of all of that, you have people who, when they're leaving, when they're going to the parking garages, they have to be escorted by security so that they don't get robbed. Now, that when you say, like, wasn't that the cost of doing business? I would say that that's a reaction to just saying having underground parking is not enough. And having the streets lit is not enough to prevent our employees from being attacked. And that's a bad thing. I wouldn't say it's a good thing. I wouldn't say it's a cost of doing business.
It's a cost of doing business in Seattle.
It's a cost of doing business in Seattle.
Thanks for making my point.
Right.
You've made yours very well.
But some of the other numbers, just because I want to answer fully your question.
Yeah.
The deployable number of officers. And that means everyone who technically can put on a uniform and go into the field if they needed to at any given time is only 913. That's lower than when it was on December 31st, 1957. I found a super old document that at the time had us at 925 total deployable. So we're actually lower than where we were in 57, despite an obvious increase in population and, of course, crime. And right now, at this very moment, there are 280 staff who can retire. They are eligible to retire this moment. And if they go, this entire department crumbles. You cannot have a police force with 280 fewer cops.
So there's a national shortage of law enforcement officers, right? So how does Seattle stand out? How do we get the officers we need? It's not just about money, right?
It's not just about money. A lot of this, and you're going to find this out with the contract once all the official details come forward, this is about overzealous accountability actions. I mean, you have right now, for example, because anyone who says, well, I don't like the accountability, we're like, well, you got to have accountability.
Yeah.
They agree with that. Right now, if an officer is going to a mass shooting, God forbid, and drives through a bus-only lane, they can be investigated by the Office of Police Accountability. They have to go through an investigation if someone complains that they went through the bus-only lane. So it's those kinds of things that they're complaining about. And I think that that is a reasonable complaint. That, like, that's just totally reasonable that you're going to have to drive down a bus-only lane, for example, on 3rd Avenue in downtown Seattle in the afternoon, which is all bus-only lanes, if there was an attack there that you have to respond to.
Well, that is a ridiculous example. You're right. To be cited for getting to a crime scene expeditiously. And, oh, I did a right on red and said the right on reds. But wasn't that what the whole BLM and the defund the police movement, which was horribly branded?
Really,
give you
really
all that.
Quick. I'm so sorry for this aside. Laura, why are you bouncing? You're making me laugh.
I saw it in the corner of my eye, but I don't want to make eye contact because I might turn to stone with that look she's giving me.
My leg is doing that jiggly thing, you know, where your leg taps. It's like an anxiety response.
I'm engaging with them and I look over at you and you're just going.
Okay, blame the producer.
Okay, now that we've answered that question,
Wasn't more accountability really the message they should have sent back in 2020 and since?
Well, it's what the accountability is, right? I mean, it's about what the accountability structure is in place. Is it built to go after cops for absolutely everything, like going into a bus lane? Is it about going after cops who do commit, you know, bad acts or act inappropriately? Yeah. And that's really what this is about. You're going to see that become a major issue as they start to do the debate in the council with this contract, depending on how the officers vote. We expect that they're going to support this contract based on just some of the preliminary details that we've heard.
Well, I mean, 83K a year is not a lot to bring a cop into a city that's, you know, potentially you get fired for driving in a bus lane, right? I mean,
plus, I mean, you know, with the distaste America seems to show for law enforcement these days, I mean, I don't know why people would be a cop anywhere.
But that's the bigger issue, right? I mean, the culture around policing is why so few people want to be police officers, more so in some cities than others. But Washington State has not been immune. You've seen a number of officers go into, for example, Pierce County Sheriff's office. Mm-hmm. However, they're also struggling. Same thing with the Thurston County Sheriff. Now they have one fewer cops there. So, I mean, they're dealing with this across the state.
I saw a guy walking down East Lake the other morning. I think it was yesterday morning I saw him, and his pants were basically off, and his underwear was basically off, and he was just kind of shuffling down. And he wasn't on the sidewalk. He was in the middle of the right lane, shuffling down the road. And I thought to myself as I'm watching that guy, I feel bad for the cop that gets called to that call. Because most officers are not mental health experts. They are not in any way, shape, or form equipped to, and I don't mean this in a negative way. What I mean by this is if someone's walking down the street with their pants half off, that's somebody who needs, who is like an LMFT, LPPC, you know, that's someone who needs mental health training. That cop is going to show up and they're going to have to figure out how to deal with that person. What I'm saying is that I don't think a lot of people sign up to be cops to be babysitters at the city level. And that's what we have in Seattle is basically cops who are being asked to be babysitters for adults. Right?
Well, won't the new Care Bear Patrol help with that?
Jason has a scoop on that as well.
So the answer is kind of, sort of, maybe, but not really. I'm diving deeper into this. It's the United Care Team or the Care Team. And I did a ride along with them 3 weeks ago, three weeks ago. Yeah. If police call them to the scene, then yes, they can help. They cannot act proactively.
So they can't see a guy with no pants.
If they were driving around and they saw what Jack saw, they can't do anything. They can maybe call it in and say, hey, FYI, this is happening. A cop would then have to go to the scene and then call them down specifically. Now, let's say they do that, which in the 4 hours I was with them, they did that one time. They got one phone call and there was clearly a whole lot of people that they could have been helping. The cop still has to stay there. This was always pitched as, okay, let us take control of this. If it's clearly a nonviolent situation, there's not a significant threat, let us handle it. That's great until you realize if you want to put that person into like a mental health facility, a cop has to do that.
Still has to be there. Yeah.
They're the ones who have the authority to make that call and give the permission to transport, not this individual social worker or care worker. Now, if you were able to maybe navigate around that, could this be a potential option in cases where an officer is really, really certain there's no violent threat? Maybe.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's
evolving, and I think it's an idea.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
But it's the way it's working right now, it feels like it's destined to fail.
Jason Rance, we appreciate you so very much. Our very own jitterbug over at 770 KTTH.
I appreciate it.
If you could swing by Jack's house on your way home, make sure everything's okay.
Yeah, just make sure everything's
going
well.
Keep your pants on and everything.
God, when I saw that guy walking down the street with no pants on, I was like, this is some weird Wild West stuff that we have going on here, right? Because this is, I think what has happened is that there was this big push. Let me back up a little bit. Everybody blames Reagan for closing the asylums, right? But really, if you really want to point the finger of blame at anybody, you have to go all the way back to the JFK, who saw the way that these asylums were being run.
Right. And wanted to revamp them, right?
He did, but so he put this condition federally, which was you'll get federal dollars if you improve, which is a very backwards way of doing it, right? So it's be better and you'll get money. And with no funding, they couldn't. So they just got worse and worse and worse and worse over time up until Reagan finally said, I'm pulling the plug on this whole operation. Right. This is a joke. And so now what we have in the United States, because healthcare is so expensive and so out of reach for so many people, and the regulation to become an LMFT or an LCSW, a therapist, is so unbelievably high and so unbelievably expensive that you have basically, and also to be a psychiatrist or a psychologist is so much training and so much time, that now what we have is people who are just basically running around with deep mental illness everywhere in the United States. We have a culture in the United States where it's okay to abuse your children. It's perfectly permissible, as a matter of fact. As I won't mention any names, but I heard a couple of people joking about spanking their kids the other day. I thought it was horrific in this very building. Talking about, I spank my kids because the anticipation of dad's coming home is much worse than any other punishment. I'm like, okay, you guys, thanks for ruining my vision of you guys as human beings. But you see what I'm saying? So we have a society in the United States which doesn't understand the neurodevelopment of children, doesn't understand how to raise healthy adolescents at all, to the point where we're like, hey, you're 12, here's an iPhone, look at all these hot chicks. And then by the time you get to college, you're an 18-year-old child. And then we say, okay, remember, don't drink and do drugs, but here's college where you can drink and do drugs and do it. You know what I mean? And
you're supposed to experiment.
Get a little weird out there. You know what I'm talking about. You're getting weird in college. What are these feelings that I have with this guy in my gym class? So we don't have a good mental health system in the United States, both at the cultural level and at the systemic level. It doesn't exist. I mean, I've been trying to find a therapist locally now for 6 months.
Yeah, good luck.
Can't find one. I got to do telehealth with somebody who doesn't even live here, right? So I think that a lot of these issues could be solved by understanding that, like, we got to kind of cut, like, we're already leaking, right? But we got to somehow cut off the spigot and prevent any more of this from happening to the best of our ability.
So probably the most effective investment we can make in America is in mental health from day one of life.
Mental health, right, exactly. And then also removing the barriers to said mental health. Why, that would be a huge, huge advancement in our culture as a whole. But unfortunately, that's kind of at the bottom of the list when it comes to Americans' priorities. And it's sad because people think that your average homeless person is simply just a drug addict. That's what they think, right? And so this is also kind of like the Andrea Suarez model, is that, well, these people are just addicted to drugs. That's their primary problem. But when you actually kind of dig down deeper underneath all that, you can take somebody off of drugs. If they've still got PTSD, they've still got whatever it is, they're going to still be a nutcase. So there is a way to solve all of these issues when it comes to policing and mental health. You just have to be able to make difficult decisions. And that first step in that difficult decision would be reopening basically asylums for the deeply mentally ill, and having taxpayer dollars go to house those people, because that's the dignified and Christian thing to do.
Well, and it seems like to me it would be the undercut the problem of domestic violence, of youth crime, of, you know, maybe even drug addiction. I mean, that kind of foundational loss of good mental health in this country, that's the root of all these issues.
Yeah, well, and we don't really even have, like, demarcations for, this is getting really deep, but we don't really have demarcations for when you are a responsible adult. We don't have it. It's your 18th birthday. There you go.
Oh, okay.
If you look at other societies, they have, or tribal societies or whatever it might be, they have demarcation. They have periods or rite of passages that you have to go through.
Right. To show that you're there, not just a calendar.
Right. So you think of like a bar mitzvah, right? Yeah. That's a demarcation of when you were a child and now you are a man, and this is how a man acts. Those are important for a developing brain. We don't really do that anymore. Now, I mean, even in Hispanic culture, it's your quinceañera, right? You're 16 years old. Right. We don't really do that anymore. What we do now is, it's kind of like, well, you're 18 and here you get to vote now, and big bada boom, and there you go.
Yeah, we kind of do it with a car. I think in a lot of, you know, here's a car, it's independence, responsibility.
But there is no real, there's no attachment that people have to communities anymore. There's no, like, we don't participate with each other. And so these are all issues that can be solved. It just takes a little bit of work. We'll take a really quick break. When we get back, Mickey Gomez is going to be coming into the studio to talk about the fact that in our education system, we have legislated ourselves into competing red and blue versions of education. Now, I don't have kids in school. Mickey Gomez does, so she'll be able to answer this for us. Andrew is busy talking to Steve, which he doesn't realize that we're now officially a minute over on the clock, and there's only so much more time I can burn, Andrew, before I run out of things to talk about. Let me tell you guys about my teriyaki chicken recipe. Have you guys heard? There's some music.
Just that'll kidding, get
Andrew.
Going.
I'm just giving Andrew a hard time. All right, we'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Mickey Gomez right after this. We all know that we're under daily attack from the libs out there. They're attacking us in our school systems. They're attacking us in our libraries. They're attacking us in our own homes, Spike O'Neill.
You're welcome.
Say otherwise.
You're welcome.
We can't get any. All the kids in school right now, they're being indoctrinated by these leftists out there that won't stop telling our kids lies about things like gender and whatnot. I've read the stories.
In history. Yeah.
All these leftists out there with their communist leanings and whatnot. So I don't have children, but thankfully we have an expert in children. Mickey Gomez is in the studio. Mama two beautiful children whom I have met. And they both shook my hand and said, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah,
they were
eye contact,
such sweet
right?
kids that I was like, when I was 15, I was like actively avoiding everybody around
just a dark little soul dressed in black, whatever. Yeah, I can imagine you as a teen.
Mickey brought you in because his story is talking about how 3/4 of the nation's school-age students are now educated under state-level measures that either require more teaching on issues like racism, history, sex, mm-hmm. and gender, which sharply limit or fully forbid such lessons, according to a sweeping post review of thousands of state laws. So have you noticed with your own kids when they say, Mom, this is what I'm learning about in school?
Yeah.
Does it tend to be more lib in nature, or does it tend to be pretty neutral? I'm not so much your opinion, but just what you've seen as a
mom. Okay. So my kids are, including
I am included in that. I'm a product of the Texas school system, okay?
Yeah.
And so my kids started school in Texas, and then we moved here to Seattle. So what I can tell you is that it's very different.
Yeah, okay.
They do celebrate Columbus Day, and it is called Columbus Day in Texas. Here, it's Indigenous Peoples Day.
Yes, it is.
Oh,
and
wow.
So there's the difference there. Another thing is on the first day of school when my daughter started, my son didn't come home telling me this, but my daughter did. G said, "Oh my gosh, it was so cool. My pronoun is on my desk."
What?
Yes.
Pronouns in schools?
Yeah.
I'll never use one. I will never use a pronoun ever in my life.
And so I posted that on Facebook about pronouns, and all my Texas friends lost it. I mean, why are they indoctrinating children so early with pronouns? And my daughter was actually quite excited to be she, her, and she said, "There's a they, them in my class."
Oh,
and
I mean,
and
no.
So,
sorry, I'm supposed to remember.
Yeah, remember. Just look up at the hat. Check
and
up
so
at your
it
hat.
Was just really interesting to allow my child to have that conversation. There were also conversations about, you know, for African American history, learning about that here versus not learning about it in Texas,
yeah.
And also famous authors who were slaves and other, you know, slaves who wrote books. They didn't learn that in Texas, and they learned about it here.
Yeah, you know, this story kind of reminded me of when the new curriculum came down in Florida and everybody was talking about it and how everyone was pointing to that one question, which was list off several ways in which slaves benefited from slavery, right?
Right.
And everybody
sure.
was very upset about that question. What I think that people missed about that and what the real complaint from the teachers was how diluted the history had become,
yeah.
where it removed it from the realm of this is a sequence of events, this is what the way that these people were treated, and it was, to use an overused term, it was very whitewashed in its interpretation.
Absolutely.
But the flip side of that, let me offer a counterpoint to that, is do we not introduce children to the horrors of the United States' past? A little bit too early. Do we not get them really ripe and ready to hate the United States pretty young when we talk about...
When a kid comes home from school and says, "Mom, I was, since I'm white, I was on the slave owner half of second grade class
yeah,
today.
Yeah, right, right, right.
And all
right.
the other kids were on the slave half
That's
of second grade class."
That's what I'm talking about.
I've got a sister and a... I don't know what you call. They are they-them in Florida. And my sister literally had to pull their child from public schools in Florida because they refused to acknowledge the preferred pronoun of my sister's kid.
Wow.
And so now my sister's kid is in a private school in Florida where they're able to be themselves and thrive and take different classes or whatever it may be. I've got a good friend who moved out of the Carolinas, used to live here, moved there for job opportunity with his wife and two daughters, would refuse to raise the girls in that closed environment where selected history was removed from textbooks, where pronouns were just, we're not getting into the nonsense, it's a man, woman, world, yada, yada, yada. He moved back, left his job and moved back to Washington because he didn't want to raise two girls in that environment.
So,
we're red and blue education systems.
So Mickey, being that you've mm-hmm. had your children in both education systems, I don't really want you to put a value on it, but do you think that there is a difference, the difference that the Washington Post makes in this, do you see it as being or would you say that your experience was as stark as the Washington Post is making it in terms of the red and blue difference?
Yes.
Wow, that is interesting to me, because I was thinking this was some kind of a hit piece, but then I don't have kids, so I don't really know.
It is different, but it's so different in so many different ways. I've got video of my son celebrating Thanksgiving when he was younger and in Texas schools, and it's about pilgrims and Indians.
Yes.
And you know, and then drawing, you know, the turkey,
turkey
on
hand.
The hand
yeah.
and all of that. Here, completely different. And I remember, you know, waiting for that Thanksgiving concert and ready to go to class and take
yeah.
the day off and celebrate Thanksgiving. And then my daughter comes home and says, "We don't celebrate Thanksgiving and we shouldn't." And I said, "Oh, tell me why. Why shouldn't we celebrate Thanksgiving?" "Well, because the Indigenous Americans," and I just went, wow.
Yeah. Stolen land.
Stark difference. And for me, I hadn't really thought about, as a mom, I hadn't really thought about it. I was so, you know, programmed to believe that Thanksgiving was a great American holiday.
Sure, sure.
And then hearing it from my daughter was completely different. So I don't have the video of my daughter on stage and the turkey and the, you know, and I don't have that,
the,
but
the
I do
Native
of my
American
son.
Little American costume with a paper feather in the hair. I remember it too.
Yeah. Right. And so it's almost like, I guess some people would say my daughter is very woke because of it.
They would.
And so she said, I was called woke by someone. And she said, what does that mean?
And the opposite of sleepwalking.
That's, I just said it's, I said it's the opposite of asleep.
Mickey Gomez, thank you so much for coming on. We appreciate it. We appreciate you. And thank you for your mom expertise and being our senior mom correspondent, because Spike's kids are all grown up now.
Yeah, they're off to college and picking their own ways. And for the states that want to, some people want their states to want to live in states where the schools won't teach things they don't want their kids to learn. You're more than welcome to move about the country and land where you feel best raising your family.
Spike, just on Tuesday, I believe, said, Jack, I don't like the if you don't like it, you can move argument. If we all remember when I was ranting about
sure.
if
yeah,
you don't
yeah,
like it,
that.
You can move.
No, no, no.
What you just said.
I guess I came off very dismissive of those type of how to raise your kid.
Yeah.
But people should have the right to raise their kid as they see fit.
If you don't like it, you can move.
Right? Those states will make you happy.
All right. We'll take a really quick break when we get back. Hundreds of people bypass parts of airport security in the last year. I know how you do it.
I'd love to learn.
You get a first class ticket, and then you get the best security line at SeaTac, which is why I only fly first class. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back right after this. Hundreds of people have bypassed parts of airport security in the last year at SeaTac. They do this by doing my secret technique. It's secret tech that has been passed down over the generations, which basically goes like this. You buy a first class ticket, and then you get put in the better security line.
That's it.
That's all you got to do.
Wow.
Just fly first class.
Money talks.
Up in the sky.
For me, it's TSA PreCheck, which was, what, $70? And a trip to a Staples and
Jeez,
Wynwood.
Laura, come on. Let me have my rich guy things. Please, Laura. Come on.
She's right there behind you.
I'm PreCheck. Jeez, all right.
I don't have to take my shoes off at the airport anymore. So there.
So basically, people do this thing where they, you know, those one-way, one-lane exit things SeaTac they have? So at SeaTac, they did it wrong because it's just one massive hallway that you can just walk into, right?
Right. Usually there's a guard sitting there.
Usually there's a couple of guards sitting there, but if you go to like SFO or San Jose or LAX, it is narrow corridors which only one person can go through, and that has about a set of four or five doors. And they're sliding doors, and they open, they close right behind you as you go through it.
Wow.
And so there is no way to actually get through it. So that's that problem that they can probably fix. I'm not too worried about this, though. I'm sure, I don't know. Is it that big of a deal? I mean, obviously, the Washington Post has to write about something, so there you go, right?
They say it equates to one in every 10 million air travelers is busting through security.
A
lady actually skipped the ID check and the ticket check, slipped into the baggage check line, and got on a flight without a ticket.
Yeah. I mean, that's one way to commit a felony.
She was detained by the FBI at the other end of her flight.
Yeah, that's really great. That's one way to...
Hi, welcome to Los Angeles. You made it.
You'll be here a while.
Welcome to prison. Hope you enjoy your felony. So, yeah, I'm going to be flying in a couple of weeks. That should be fun. Diane wants to know, Laura, what's up with you guys today? Jason in a pink suit and tie, Jack wearing a sleek black necktie. Is there a wedding at Cairo? So I wear ties every day to work, primarily because I want to shame all the other slobs who work in here, other than the Nate Connors. Dang, Nate Connors.
Yippers.
Is that a Nike?
It is, but I've got a clip-on tie out there in the newsroom.
Dang,
I'll put it on.
Dang, Nate Connors. We're not at the end of the show yet. You're already killing me right now. But I wear a tie every day to work, mostly because I feel like it's important to... Okay, this is the real reason. If I'm ever on the chopping block for whatever reason, all right, or let's say we're making mass layoffs here at Cairo Radio, right?
Yeah.
Who they're going down the list and they're looking at everybody's profile picture. They're thinking about, they're reminiscing on who they walk past in the hallways.
Uh-huh.
And they're going to come to let's just say, I don't know, someone who wears band t-shirts on a regular basis to work, or I don't know,
I would do that.
Someone who wears like very loose fitting pajama clothes every day to work, not mentioning any names.
That's okay. I think they know who you're talking about.
And then what they do is they go, but you know, that young Jack Stein, he comes in every day, tailored hoodies, necktie every single day, pressed, looking like a million bucks.
Yeah, professional attire.
That's what I'm saying, yeah, is that yeah. The reason that you wear a tie to work, and this is, I don't wear like a tie. This is as comfortable as your pajamas right now because it's all fitted clothing. Yes, I'm wealthy. And so, so the reason that you do that is because I think it's important to take pride in your appearance and take pride in the way that you present to the world. And all too often what people do, especially in the Pacific Northwest, is basically like, well, I want to look like a cross between a mountaineer and a meth dealer, so I'll just kind of roll out of bed and I will just with my tousled hair, and I'll just kind of waltz into Google Complex or whatever, or I'll waltz into Fred Hutch or whatever, and I'll just sit down on my desk looking like I either just got roughed up by a bunch of young ruffians in the street and I was just partially robbed, or that I've been on a 5-day coke bender and I just threw these clothes together, right? I don't want to look like that. I want to look like
you want to look good. Like you care about the job you have.
Exactly.
There you go.
Exactly.
And that's why you'll be here when the rest of us are gone.
And here's the other thing, is that when people say, is that hoodie tailored? I can say, as a matter of fact, it is, right? I can say, as a matter of fact, yes, it is. That's tailored clothing.
People are asking you if your hoodie is tailored?
They never do. But when
But when they do,
I will then, I'll have, I also have the, Spike, you've seen it. It's the pocket that I have them sew into my hoodie.
Yes.
So when I moved here, I had this idea to have a pocket sewn into my hoodie so that I could put my cell phone on the inside of my hoodie, so if I ever got robbed, they wouldn't be able to find that.
You can say, look, nothing, empty pockets.
Right,
plus,
hey,
the phone would misshape that tailored pocket on the front of you. A big bulky phone.
A big
phone.
Bulky phone.
It'd like me wearing cargo pants with four different cans
of
beer in the,
exactly,
in the side
it would,
pockets.
It would ruin it. So I had the tailor also put in a pocket in all of my hoodies with matching fabric that is specifically for my cellular telephone. And now everybody knows that I'm a filthy narcissist and no one will like me ever again.
Aww.
Andrew, A+. Great job today, buddy. I'm proud of you, Andrew, for being a young schoolboy and going to school and getting
your
degree.
Jack.
Your advanced degree, just like at WGU.edu.
Just like at WGU.
Nate Connors, I was already talking about your fashion,
sir.
Dude. You are looking sharp as a tack,
my
friend.
I'm feeling sharp. Thank you.
Looking like you could cut through a can of Coke, no problem right now. Yeah, you're looking real sharp. Laura, I'll give you a solid A- today for not wearing a boy band t-shirt.
I thought it was going to be for bouncing.
For the
back
leg too. Drumming, yeah.
And also, Spike will give you a solid C+ today.
Thanks, buddy.
Here's your quote of the day.
Nice shooting, son. What's your name?
Here is a voice that I thought that I would never hear again, poking its head up from underneath a sewer grate.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
I do.
Hey, Jack.
Is this your sailboat?
Is this your sailboat, Jack? Hi, Carl Rove. What are you doing in the sewer?